Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
The battle for America is on.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah, I know. That was this past Thursday, but this year I decided to do the Thanksgiving special the weekend following the day. Becky and I are adjusting to an empty nest. Our son has settled in West Virginia, so we resumed our Afghanistan holiday regimen. During his deployment some years ago, we enjoyed Thanksgiving in Monterey. A nice walk along Cannery Row, maybe a little lunch at Bubba's, check into our mansion suite in nearby Salinas, dinner at the Grotto, a visit to the aquarium, and a nice drive together home. It doesn't quite replace hearing my son and Becky chatting it up while preparing our dinner. He made the pumpkin pies using the family recipe. My contribution was peeling, splitting, and disemboweling the yolks, mixing it up with all the goodies, repacking the eggs for deviled eggs. I would get the devilish part of the preparations, of course. And afterwards, Zach might regale us with a piano concert of various movie music tunes. We'd catch a game of all American football, and then later I'd watch It's a Wonderful Life with pumpkin pie. Today, I want to help you see what an amazing time in history it was when God stirred the hearts of Pastor Bradford and the Pilgrims and those others who attended that trip across the sea to the New World. No one considering this history can fail to recognize the hand of divine providence preparing to raise up this one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Let's talk about the significance of this all-American holiday, Thanksgiving Day. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
On Thanksgiving, we remember the early Pilgrims, the Separatists, who came to Plymouth Rock carrying with them in their hearts the seeds of freedom, the truth that would make us free, and the spirit that dwelt in them, bringing liberty. The queen of liberty is freedom of conscience, and religious liberty was the prize they sought at the Rock in Plymouth. It was July 1620 when the Mayflower left Southampton Port. The wind filled the sails on which was emblazoned their motto, "In God We Trust." This became our national motto. It was 1620, only 9 years after the King James Version had been printed in 1611, and about 5 years before King James passed to his reward, 1625. And his son, Charles I of England, took the throne. So the Pilgrims carried the 1592 Geneva Bible with them across the sea, while the Pilgrims were establishing their colony at Plymouth Rock. King James died. His son, Charles, became king. That was 1625. Intense controversy over the false doctrine known as the divine right of kings developed, with Cromwell leading the charge against the presumption of any man to call himself king and assume a divine right to rule at his pleasure. And Charles exercised his quote-unquote divine right with utter disdain for the rights of Englishmen. Charles sought support from Rome during the ensuing conflict between Parliament and the king. This he did at the encouragement of his Roman Catholic wife, Henrietta Maria of France. This crossed a line for the Reformation Puritans and exacerbated their distrust of Charles. Cromwell was especially enraged by this betrayal of the faith, and he became the leader of the resistance to the hideous doctrines of the Catholic Church, the divine right of kings, and the encroachment of idolatry into Protestant churches. These twin controversies led to the execution of Charles and the rise of Cromwell to power. The wretched false teaching that God appoints every king with a divine right from God to rule was brought to its knees. Oh, you believe that idea, the divine right of kings? Well, the Bible doesn't. I'm just saying, look at Hosea 8 verse 4. God does not appoint every person who becomes a national ruler. Sometimes we put people in office that God refuses to even recognize. Read Hosea 8 verse 4. It says, "They have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, and I knew it not." We put some people in power that God never recognizes. I suggest you give careful attention to Romans 13, 1-6. The powers mentioned there are ordained of God. Indeed, all powers ordained of God. Not necessarily, however, the persons holding the power. These rulers are supposed to be ministers of God, not servants to mammon. The ordaining authority is Christ, to whom has been given all power. And that word power translates exousia, authority or right to rule, in heaven and in earth. That's Matthew 28:18. By the way, he appointed the sword of civil justice, mentioned in Romans 13, and ordained that it should be used to execute wrath against the evildoer. And if we get this government out of the hands of these oppressors, the sword of civil justice will finally cut through the lies and expose the truth and bring judgment upon their wicked heads. When Cromwell signed the execution warrant against Charles I, the message sent circled the globe. No man, not even a king, is above the law. Christ was confessed to be God's appointed prince over all the kings of this earth. Read Revelation 1:5. The only absolute ruler of the world, and the only rightful ruler of the world. But Cromwell took it another step. His motto was, "No king but Christ." The principle that all kings are under Christ became firmly planted in America at Plymouth when the Pilgrim Separatists established the famous Mayflower Compact, establishing rule by the consent of the governed and not by the oppressive fist of the governor. The invisible hand of Providence sent the Pilgrims ahead to establish their colony at Plymouth, and while they were being forged in the fires of trials and their mettle tested, Cromwell was setting the stage for the rise of the American dream, which is much more than a house with a white picket fence. It's liberty and justice for all. That's the ideal for which we strive. Cromwell was the principal leader of the Commonwealth after the execution of Charles I in 1649. He ruled in this capacity for 4 years until 1653, when he took the title Lord Protector of England and ruled the rest of his life to 1658. So in God we trust, no king but Christ, and rule by the consent of the governed. All arose out of the faith of Christians, a faith shaped and instructed by the scriptures. The next major move of Providence was to establish an English version of the scriptures that would become the Bible for the English-speaking people of England and America. A Bible for the New World, another foundation stone of the American experience, for which we are deeply grateful, was the rise of the King James Version. At the time our Plymouth Pilgrims sailed, it was still new, only 9 years in circulation. They came across with the 1592 Geneva Bible. The KJV, or King James Version, rose to near universal use in the English-speaking world beginning in 1675. And by 1730, God used George Whitefield, the Tennant family, the Wesleys, and the famous Jonathan Edwards and others to light the fires of revival in the colonies with the King James Version. The first Great Awakening established the King James Bible as dominant among believers in the early to mid-1700s. And by the time of the War for Independence and the establishment of this Republic of the United States, the King James Bible was so widely used that it was virtually the official Bible of Christians in the United States. All citations of scripture used in any legal or commercial text were from the KJV. It was preached from every pulpit except a Catholic one, and it was the Bible recognized by our Congress, judiciary, and every executive from our founding, George Washington, on, and it continues to be so today. Although our pilgrims did not carry it with them to these shores, God sent it across from England to America in boatloads and used it to consolidate the foundation principles of America. In God we trust, emblazoned on the sails of the Mayflower. And today you see it on every coin minted and dollar printed, and declared at every recitation of our pledge, one nation under God. No king but Christ. You saw Cromwell's model confirmed in our Constitution and reaffirmed almost 250 years after our Declaration, breaking from the rule of monarchy during the last election, 2024, when God made it a referendum on this question. Christ is king versus man is king or government is king. The side that declared Christ is king won. Thank God, a return to our founding principles. Consent of the governed. It's a biblical principle. Many examples can be presented. The idea of a man ruling out from under God began with Nimrod, by the way, Genesis chapters 10 and 11. So God got rid of that guy and then raised up a nation that would be under his rule, called Israel, and firmly established the law governing kings in Deuteronomy 17, 14 to 20. You should know that God did not approve of kings ruling his people. Nimrod got that started. God destroyed his kingdom, divided the people, scattered them all over the world, Genesis 10 and 11, but the people went everywhere following the pattern Nimrod set, separating themselves into kingdoms ruled by kings and warring with one another over the resources of the earth. God knew his people would finally succumb to this temptation and want to have a king like the other nations did. God accommodated this, but left strict rules governing who should be made king over his nation and how they were to behave. He gave them what we call the Law of Kings in Deuteronomy 17. In the Law of Kings, written about 1400 BC, God required the king to acknowledge that he was under God and under the law, not above it. The king was an executive of God, a minister of God, and served under the law. God's law also stipulates that the king would receive his office by the consent of those he governed. Does that surprise you? It's true. In verses 14 and 15 of Deuteronomy 17, he commanded the people, quote, "Thou shalt in any wise set him king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not thy brother." And quote, there's no reason to say this unless it was possible that they should do this thing that would offend God. In other words, God stipulated that the people would be setting the king over them. Consent of the governed. It was the violation of this rule, by the way, that brought the nation of Israel to its ruin. God said through Hosea the prophet, "They have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, and I knew it not. Of their silver and their gold have they made them idols, that they may be cut off." Now Deuteronomy 17 was written about 1400 BC, and this was written between 755 and 722 BC. One more major plank had to be put down to complete the platform or foundation upon which America would rise to the status of that nation under God that's blessed, increased by him to be made the head of all nations. Quote, "All men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights," end quote. John Locke and Montesquieu agreed in the essentials of good biblical governing principles, but it was Locke who won the day on this. The concept that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. When we celebrate Thanksgiving Day, it should be understood in the context of the broader work of divine providence to raise up a Christian nation under God, guided by truth with liberty and justice for all. The pilgrims left England to find freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, which is the mother of freedom of speech and faith. While God was carving out a home for liberty here in America, he was preparing the people who would occupy that home, Americans. A people who professed "In God We Trust, Christ is King," who repudiated the doctrine of oppression called the divine right of kings, and embraced the fundamental biblical principle of the right of consent of the governed, and the self-evident truth that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. I hope you see the important connection between the settlement at Plymouth Rock and Christ the Rock on which this land came to rest and from which it grew into the mightiest nation the world has ever known. Remember the words of Patrick Henry, "This nation was not built on religion but on the gospel of Jesus Christ." Hold on, I'll be right back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheinbach, your host for the Brain Massage Show. I interviewed Pornabal Wag, running for assembly in the 37th District. She outlined five things she believes are critical to address in order to save California. I thought she demonstrated keen insight and understanding of what our state needs. Here's number three.
The third one is a surplus of oil and gas, and we can become a net exporter. Oil and gas, or particularly oil, well, gasoline is very expensive in this state. It's the most expensive state for gasoline. It's almost $1.50, almost $2 more than the national average. And that's because we have, you know, these blends, the summer blends and winter blends. And on moreover, it's how you make these blends. The whole process, it's so expensive to make the blends. And so they have to pass the costs of making these expensive blends on to the customer. So our gas and oil are very expensive. We've also got other ways to become energy efficient. We've got three big nuclear plants, two of which are being completely dismantled. One is the PG&E nuclear power station in Humboldt. I think it's no more. And the San Onofre in near Camp Pendleton, that has been dismantled. And the last one, which is still sort of running, but maybe 5 to 10%, you know, efficiency, is the Diablo Canyon. And all these three need to be up and running again. So we've got nuclear power, which can probably, we can get 20 to 30% out of that. Oil and gas, which we can probably get 60%. And you got solar and you got wind. But those should be ancillary. Those should be way down on our list. But the big ones are oil and gas, nuclear, and then the distant third and fourth could be geothermal and hydropower is another one. We've got a lot of dams in the state, and we can get a lot of hydroelectricity. Unfortunately, we're trying to get rid of dams. We've gotten rid of two dams up on the Klamath River already in Northern California. So we're going backwards instead of going forwards.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singing "The Enemy is on the March." An enemy that will steal from us our liberties. Bradford led the surviving crew of the Mayflower in the adoption of the Mayflower Compact, in which the people consented together in the form of their governance, having dedicated themselves and their undertaking to, quote, the glory of God and advancement of ye Christian faith, end quote. The small band of brave Christian soldiers could not have known what a shockwave they began that has shaken down Nimrod's tower every time the globalist agents of hell have tried to rebuild it. The Mayflower Compact was the first time in history since the day Israel swore to adopt the Mosaic Law as their constitution of their own free will. Read Exodus 24. Look at Exodus 19:3-8, and then the breaking and subsequent renewal of their contract with God in Exodus 34. The Mayflower Compact was the first time since Christ entered the world and proclaimed that to him was given all power in heaven and in earth. Let's see, that would be a little under 1,600 years after Christ's proclamation that all power had been given to him in heaven and in earth. It's the first time since then that a small band of freemen voluntarily covenanted together to formulate their own civil government grounded upon the Bible under Christ for the sake of his gospel and to the glory of God. America's political heritage begins with this compact, which compact begins with these words, "In ye name of God, amen." In this compact, these Christians put to rest the anxiety of the unbelievers among them, the strangers. Here is what happened. The captain was Christopher Jones, not a namesake of the famous explorer, but a Christ-bearer nonetheless. He navigated the Mayflower through treacherous waters, which caused them to arrive much later in the season than was planned. It was December, and a hard winter lay ahead. Captain Jones recommended the port where they made contact there with the shore, although they had been pushed far off their original course. Why would that be a problem? Well, their contract and charter specified where they were to establish a Virginia settlement, and landing outside the agreed-upon location would void the contract. That's just the rules they lived by. At least that's what the strangers feared. And they thought that these Christians were going to consign them to unlawful servitude. So here is what those rascally Christians did who were appointed to lead this ship. Well, they included the strangers in the civil covenant that they all agreed to. thus securing their rights as equals with the Christians. That's how the Christians run things. Another important milestone was established at Plymouth. They would together establish, quote, just and equal laws, end quote, that would apply to everyone equally. Furthermore, the Christians and the strangers alike limited their vow to rendering, quote, all due submission and obedience, end quote. And by the way, later this becomes the premise for separating from England. King Charles violated the principle of just and equal application of the laws of England, and the founders felt no obligation to submit or obey such a rascal. The unbelievers did not need to fear the Christians leading their ship. Real ones, you know, not the Catholic gang of thugs who even at that time imposed an unequal application of laws favoring their party against all others, forbade reading the Bible, and refused to allow freedom of religion, of speech, of assembly, or of redressing of grievances. This was anathema, cursed to the Protestants, who would not tolerate the Catholics' attempt to impose this on them any further after the Reformation. So, however, they saw no inconsistency in imposing these very same things on the Baptists. Well, for another time. Anyway, the Mayflower Compact required no more than their due submission and obedience to the agreed upon, and everybody had an equal vote, the just and equal laws. The settlers had no encounters with the Indians in their colony until one day. An Indian appeared, tall, muscular, and bold, walking down the main street of the colony straight toward a group of men gathered at the common house. Well, they were speechless. The Indian stood before them in nothing but a loincloth, slowly raised his hand and said, "Welcome." "Welcome?" He spoke English. As they stood there flummoxed, the Indian asked in broken English, "Have you got any beer?" The pilgrims met Samoset, another witness to the amazing providence of God. Samoset informed the settlers that the Indians native to Plymouth, who were there before them, were known as the most feared tribe in the region, the Patuxets, a fierce, inhospitable tribe. These Indians were known for ruthlessly murdering men, women, and children of earlier groups that arrived there from Europe. The settlers were surprised and horrified, surprised because they had very little encounter with any of the Indians in the area, and none of them were in the immediate colony there at Plymouth. And in fact, they saw no Indians at all within the area of their colony. So what happened? Well, Samoset explained that 4 years earlier, the entire tribe was wiped out by a mysterious plague. The neighboring tribes believed this was a supernatural curse on the Patuxet Indians, the Patuxet tribe, and so they were afraid to engage the pilgrims directly. The leading medicine men of these tribes gathered in a dark swamp, casting curses upon the Europeans, the pilgrims. The Puritan pastor, Cotton Mather, would later write about this and say the devils they ignorantly worshiped told them, quote, they could not hinder those people, end quote, and told them that they would, quote, become the owners and masters of the country, end quote. So that's what the Indians in that area believed at that time when our pilgrims arrived. This is what happened at Jericho, Joshua 2, verse 9. You have to read it and think about it. The nearest tribe to the Plymouth colony was called the Wampanoags, and their ruler was called the Massasoit. I guess that's how you pronounce it. I'll refer to him as the chief. This tribe was about 40 miles away in what is now Rhode Island. Now, Samoset, who was a member of that tribe, explained to the settlers that his chief would be honored to establish a peace between his tribe and the settlers. This is when the Plymouth colony meets Squanto. Samoset introduced Squanto to the Plymouth colony as the interpreter for the Wampanoag chief in the upcoming meeting to work out a peace treaty. When the chief came, the colony met Squanto, who spoke perfect English. The Plymouth colony leadership learned that Squanto had been a Patuxet Indian who had been twice captured by British explorers, first in 1605 and then again in 1614. After a total of 9 years in England, he escaped and returned to his home, but at that time, that that plague had run through, and he found only ruined buildings and decayed skeletons. Of course, he was devastated. He became a useful member of the Wampanoag tribe. After the six-point peace plan was agreed to with Squanto's help, and the chief returned to his tribe, Squanto requested to remain with the colony and to offer any assistance they might require. Squanto taught them how to survive and thrive in this new world. Pastor Bradford described him as a special instrument sent of God for their good beyond their expectation. He taught them how to stalk game, refine maple syrup, and most importantly, how to plant and harvest corn, Indian style, using fish for fertilizer and mounding the rows for planting and all this kind of thing. And the most important of all was this. Squanto taught them how to plant pumpkins and cook the pumpkin meat with maple syrup and honey and spices. And the pilgrims prepared this like a custard pie because they were used to doing custard pies and stuff. So they did that. And a lady later on in 1654 named Hannah Woolley wrote a recipe for pumpkin pie in a cookbook that she published. The greatest thing to come to us from our Plymouth brethren is, I admit, not the pumpkin pie that I love so well. It's the planting of the seeds of In God We Trust, No King But Christ, Consent of the Governed, All Men Created Equal with Divinely Endowed Rights. But I must tell you, for me, the pumpkin pie tops it off perfectly. Especially my wife's family recipe, nothing better. I think I'll go enjoy some right now. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. You let me know you see that they are on. You can email me by going to our website, brainmassage.net. That's brainmassage.net. Find the Contact Us button and click Send after you fill in and give me your message, of course. You can leave a message on our listener response hotline. Dial 1-805-314-2114. Dial 1-805-314-2114. I'd love to hear from you, even if it's just to say Happy Thanksgiving. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.
Encounter God. The word means to meet, to experience, to confront. How would you like to encounter God? Maybe it's been a while since you've experienced God in a meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter, or maybe you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God and know that God is real. Your next brain massage is scheduled for Saturday at 12 noon and Sunday at 7 a.m.